Night section of the evening, and first up, all the way from Fermoy, no expense spared, Gerard Organ.
Anyway, I was just thinking about milking cows at home. That's what we do on the farm, milking cows. And I was just thinking about, you know, the cows kind of, you know, walking up through the path. And I was thinking, so I just wrote this. They follow the cow path, threading the ring field, answering the call, uncalled. Silent, hunkered bovines. Big blinking eyes, black and white, patchy. Elevator processing the wash dip, sanitized, suction tubes, pulse, splash, milk in viewing cups, unlike the old, chewing of the cud, and sting of tail, swished, caked in cow dung, slap in the face, uneasy shuffle, hoof to hoof, the pit-pat pit of milk in tin buckets. Short, sharp kick, flood of milk and gravel and cow dung, hot, pungent, olive green, or cakes, caked in horse spice, that rise en masse as you reach them.
Thank you. It was well worth the effort of the security staff to keep you here for that long. Gerard was the first 1A. We did have a person who was on first, but we've had to put him back a small bit because people have to go home. And so Mia Weber is on next.
It's a very short piece, and the introduction is much longer than the piece itself. Adolf Otto Eichmann was he was personally responsible for sending hundreds of thousands of people to slaughter during the Second World War. And the funny thing is that in 1943 he helped his wife's family Jewish branch escaped from Vienna, and he saved their lives. So he was a funny person, basically. And this piece is called Eichmann's Children. I realized that your grandparents didn't have to watch the smoke coming out of the chimneys of Auschwitz-Birkenau and Treblinka and Stutthof, but I hope you get the point. If you don't worry, I'll play some joke up later to entertain you anyway. Mom, what is Dad doing at work? He never talks about it. Well, your father makes sure that every train is getting everywhere on time. By the way, don't forget to wash the strawberries.
Thank you.
impression of a train.
Thank you. There you go. Give me a bad bunch of peace.
I've got two short little poems. Her fiddle's a puddle, her bow the wind blows across, rain spatters the surface. And light rain falls, a siren sings, slowly detuning in the distance. Cars rush past, drowning out the siren, water in my ears.
Back. Give me of Richard Horsford, please.
And this is a poem called The Mountain Calls Down, and it uses a form of tanka, which consists of a stanza of five lines, incorporating a haiku, so 575, and then the two final lines of the stanza being seven syllables each. The mountain calls down. To set each stanza limber on its feet, I sound the drift of tanka, dredging in spilted algae-laced currents, while above us the mountain calls down to the valley. 577, until lovers no tally will ever fathom our beat.
Thanks, Richard. Can we have Sheen one, please?
So I'm going to use this rarely quiet ovale to read a short piece of prose. This is just a section of a story that I'm working on. At this point in the story, this is kind of the build-up to the climax. The main narrator came to Paris with his girlfriend for a romantic weekend, and while they're there, they split up. She's gone home, and he's wandering Paris. So, here we go. I was only supposed to stay a week, a romantic getaway. See the Eiffel Tower, kiss with a mouthful of champagne, fuck under the Arc de Triomphe. Now it's nearly 2 months, so I will have to start working soon. There's an Irish bar nearby, they might like me. I have been very careful since becoming a loner not to spend my money. I excess only on the city itself. Yesterday I stood and stared at the house which Beckett occupied while writing Waiting for Godot, which while he insisted was nothing to do with God, has everything to do with God. That's the problem with ideas. Once you express them, you give them away. After that, I sat near the house Joyce occupied while he was writing Finnegan's Wake. He most certainly occupied it, as he hated paying rent. I hate rent too, though this does not make me like Joyce. I think all art has a fundamental problem in that it cannot make up if it wants the moon or sixpence. For a while I held my notebook in my hand, with the pen stretched over the paper, but was unable to put anything down. Not a doodle or a scribble, not even a diary entry. If you had passed me then and asked for me to write my own name on the page, I would have been incapable. As the sun crested over the stark horizon and the shadows of Paris grew, I noticed a thick patch of sweat on my back and that my muscles ached from stillness. I rose and went about the city. Paris at night is a different city. I climbed the steep hills of Montmartre in the 18th arrondissement. At the top is the church and it is ecstatic. To get there, I took the metro via Pigalle. The metro is a crazy animal, swerving at leisure, coming whenever it feels, hawking black metal when the brakes pull up. And the sardines inside read their gloomy papers, plug buds in their ears, flirt. Young women pull their skirts down as they sit on young boys' laps, hands creeping everywhere, everywhere. The doors whoosh open, they do, whoosh. At the top of Montmartre is the Basilica de Sacré-Cœur, a white domed magnificence, and I felt immediately at peace. Not for the church, that mattered little, but for the people. Strands and strands of them milling in groups, like clusters of molecules, interacting, morphing each other. There I perched with a pouch of rough Algerian tobacco and listened to an Arab play the melodica. I hummed softly along, sometimes inserting the old Irish words. Raglan Road and C-sharp minor, two octaves out of my league. I wept a little, I couldn't afford to weep a lot because I'd sweat so much that day. Someone gave me a beer. I made a joint and it disappeared towards the church. The man with the melodica nodded to me and moved on. I joined a new group, one with a lively Spanish guitar. Two girls swung fire poi to my side, I lit the cigarette off one. A girl kissed me as the night drew in, but when I opened my eyes, she was gone. Only the salt of sweat and cheap beer was left on my lips. At some point I realized if you can't see the weird one in the group, it's you. So I stole some beer from an unattended crate and made my way back to the hostel. It was close, just 15 minutes walk, and I needed to tell someone of the magic of the mountain. Maybe sixpence would be there, or a leaf, or the Dutch girl would kiss me and I could pretend Paris had loved me, or someone new would be there. Hostels breed blow-ins. Moulin Rouge is a dirty street and you have to cross through it to get back to Rochechouart. Tourists outnumber real people and I was but one of the millions to their shame, their guilt, my guilt, come by culture in neatly packed gifts. The mountain was wearing away and by the time I got back to the hostel I didn't want to talk to anyone and no one wanted to talk to me, so I sat in my room and got drunk until I was sick and I knew I would have to leave this place soon. Thanks.
Thank you. Can we have Philip Spallan, please?
Thanks. That was incredible, man. Well done. The gateway to the night. My heart lies a harmony. Fog follows my vision. I smelt it like damp condensation, stainy it just blue, damp blur. It chimneys from an invisible boundary that is crystal clear, with a moon lamp light glowing milk white and sculpted from ivory. Halo down over, revealing the gateway frame. The guards lie against its iron, one starboard and the other port. They were made from smoke, crafted into heavy, ugly faces that look translucent. They expect to pay. But not a physical cup of bullets or water-folded leaves. The price of bravery, a will, a want, a passion to enter that gate. I'll pay it everything I have, but coins of feeling are colder, harder to count and calculate. I'll offer parts of me. DNA is backwards for and. It's made from protein strands. That's most valuable and plentiful inside of me. But the portside guard refuses the demand. Saints too physical. They don't include capsules of your soul. And starboard guard laughs amusedly. My gut vibrates with energy. My will demands my entry. And suddenly I run, I run, I run, I run. Straight through the gateway. I expected the giants to smash me. Gone, kill me there. Because I broke their stare. But they didn't lift a finger. The eyes only followed me. And although I've passed one gateway, my journey has only just begun. Thanks.
Thanks, Fuller. Can we have Mary O'Connell, please?
This is a Valentine poem, but I'm afraid it's a rather sad one. It's called Bitter Valentine. As the day draws near, I walk past shop displays. There are so many bears that wear their hearts up front, badges of blazing love. Blinking, I turn away. Bears were our special joy, though of the polar kind. I came upon you late, yet slipped so easily into the life we made, it seemed we always knew a flare of recognition would guide us to our lair. The Millennium Bear I gave you, we named him Amund after Amundsen, keeps solitary vigil on my bed. His stylish navy cap reminds me of the one you used to wear each time we set out on our trips. We drove all over France, your mother's birthplace, spicing our repartee with Gallic sayings, trotting out spoonerisms as we bemoaned a lack of ram, or watched a bird of prey dive down in one foul swipe. There were moments of dismay, as when the Fiat Panda stalled climbing above the snow line on the col they called Bonnet. Those sun-filled days slid downwards as time locked the workshed where once your hands would magic coils and broken wires to life. Time forced your powerful frame to wedge into a wheelchair and then into the wicker coffin they lowered into the clay. The bears stare out at me as if they know the awaited day will be my first without you. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. That can we have Emily Davis Fletcher, please.
That's too low, but no. So I read this. This is not a Valentine's poem, really, but I read it yesterday at the Love Poems at Waterstones, and afterwards I read two poems, and afterwards Connor Vance was like, "Oh, you're a terrorist. You just come in here dropping bombs on Valentine's Day." And I was like, what? And I guess he's right. Like, one was about violence, this one is ostensibly about sex. But Paul was like, I don't know that poem. I don't know the lingerie poem. So I was like, I'll bring it at O'Vale and read it. So Paul, hopefully you remember this. I know I read it at O'Vale before. Can't believe you don't remember it. So here it is. So it's called Sown in Need. The lingerie sale is a karmic wink. What goes around comes around, the rack of sheer, bright skins with ribbons and bows like atrophied limbs, catching my fingers in its web of coarse sex. He wants a surprise, one size fits all, dyed the color of cartoon cherry blood, slit up the belly and sewn by a woman with needs. I toss her on my bed. Her long black braid licks her curved back. Her skin shines with sweat. I whisper in the hollow of her ear, my body used to be enough. Once we made love three times on the way to the toilet. Ah, she says, splitting the symmetry of her mouth. Four if you count on the toilet, I add. Then the clicking starts from her dislocated thumb, shifting in, out, in, out, in, out, in, as she strips me, scratches and bites my breasts to make them ache and swell, spits on my chest to glisten depth, picks blood and rust from under her nails, rubs them into my cheeks and belly to look flush, wipes her oily brow inside my thighs for a sticky glow, snaps her thick braid with teeth like lightning, wraps it high around my hips. The remaining inches hang like a tail. She packs in the crack of my ass and up between my legs, covering my pubic hairs with a fan of split ends. The clicking stops. I pull the blanket up to my chin, pretend to sleep, both of us worn out from his surprise.
Boom.
Waterstones would never be the same.
You would have warned the figure of the village. Does that really happen? So call that Rosie O'Regan.
Top that, yeah. Sure. I don't know how I feel about Paul Casey requesting that particular thing. I'm not too happy, I can tell you, there'll be words later.
Don't go home,
Paul.
He didn't
request it,
he wasn't there.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, too much information. Words are at least the wearing of lingerie.
I'm going to give you two haikus. Dust fall floats speckled, spring light onto everything, even the shadows. For fear of falling, I remain horizontal, become all surface.
Yeah, okay. Charles Clark, please.
Yeah, you think you're taller than everybody, don't you?
I know we have a general election in the offing, but if this is political, then it's about the other side of the world or somewhere. I read this before, but somebody's just handed me a typescript of it. Afghanistan, from Tower Block, street corner, football terraces, to sandy encampments in a losing war, boys, youths, attend the sergeant's bark, the officer's smooth drawl. Villagers, unsaved citizens, the mullah's sermon in the market war, are threats and dangers that flank tanks, planes, drones cannot completely smother. The swatting spear, they're going to shoot me by the pistol.
Thank you, Charles. Can we have Pat Carter, please?
Okay, two short extracts from a longer poem. First extract is called War Colours. The boys made privy to war's atrocities. His stomach lies shivering on insidious grass. Wet, killer, kidney-stifling grass. A horde of snails oozes over a bed of blossoms, sliming precious Persian jewels, Livingston daisies, love in a mist, they chomp and chew through a village of lilies. At cool anemic sunrise, a floral mylai lies ragged in their slow motion wake. Bolts of bridal cloth glisten silvery over the wounded stem. Revenge of the lilies. The boy plots with the grieving lilies. What are the fears which snails share? Being landlord to a wasp in one's shell. Being mistaken for a bumpkin periwinkle. Being spotted with a polka dot foot. Being informed one is no longer hermaphrodite. Being fed for life on a diet of thistles. Being naked as a slug in the Sahara Desert. Being tested for Dr. Martin's new stamp smart night vision boot. Being buried in salt. Being antlerless after a fight with a black scissors. Being serenaded by a crow singing shouting horn, shouting horn. Being acquainted with the verb manger.
Can we have Alicia Hollingsworth, please?
Okay, so this is like a small performance piece I wrote towards the first person I fell in love with as I was falling out of love with her. Pick your poison, the bartender said, eyebrows raised, and although I knew my favorite cocktail would always be a mixture of the way your eyes wrinkled when you laughed, and the way your lips spread into a smile, and the way your hand fit into mine, I couldn't tell him that. so I said tequila because you would have said whiskey. Then I ordered a few more until my throat didn't feel like your breath, until my lips didn't taste like yours, until I couldn't see straight, so that maybe, when I went to stumble back into your arms, I would trip and fall for someone else instead.
Can we have Max Creedon, please?
Shocking pieces. When they're recording, they say, you know, they like sound, it's in the box. And I studied light and physics a long time ago, light and sound. But when I talk to Michael Weber, he makes it sound magical. And he talks about colours and shapes of sound waves. So I think he's inspired this piece. An art. So, in the box. A sky gazer can watch for waves up there. One listened and found Earth's ambient sound, that whoosh of atmosphere passing through here, saying, let there be me, light comes crashing aground. It comes at its own speed, feeding life beams, illuminating all, but without music it seems. The quiet planet said its plain sound was dull. Behind walls of background sound, plain chant just lulled. I need a new palette to colour each tone. So the art was formed in a language of sign. The bass notes to build foundations to rock. Percussive white beats, pink rhythms on top. Vertical, triangles, symbols greet you. He's in the box, the sound creator seeks you. Gift the earth then, eyes to heaven. Ears to ground, now syncopate them. So, it's a short one there for yourself. I loved your haikus.
Oh, thank you.
I always said, when I see the sparrows in my garden, sparrows stop over, refuel on red berry juice, and clearance for takeoff. So, this is a short one I just wrote for my man. He's a quiet man, very steady. My man, he don't say much. Sometimes he don't talk at all. But on moonlight walks, he calculates the azimuths. He knows the constellations, and he can name me any star.
That's Max. Can we have Kieran McCartan, please?
See, sorry, I hate for him.
On the ball. They just started saying how I hate people who introduce their poetry, and so I said I better do that quick. This is actually a short, it's like the opening extract of a larger piece that was written while walking around Vancouver from like 5 a.m. to 5 p.m. for like 12 hours, just walking and writing down what happened. It's more like a bit of a documentary, really. But I'm just going to read you the opening little bit of it. It's called Thinking of Titles Such as A Day in Vancouver. I'd like to thank Brent Andrew Bereshek for the seat he has given me. The morning is quiet, but for the birds and the fountain. I squint in the sunlight as it rises above the mountain. I crossed West Georgia Street without any bother. The sun needs glasses. The water is barely moving. The trees don't sway. It was a little cool with only yesterday's linens. Lights and blowing. And now the sun warms as it rises. And I couldn't sleep any longer because my body doesn't know where I am. I thought about coming and walking and writing. But listen is all there is. The birds on the wire were like something from the Alfred Hitchcock film. The mountains are cutting in beauty. The cyclist came from the left and panned to the right.
I walked through downtown and the city was sleeping. I jaywalked and jaywalked and jaywalked and jaywalked. Another biker, left to right. There is walking to be done. There's a pigeon at the convention center and a walker's shadow. This bench is a little warmer and I don't know who to thank. There's sunlight on the clouds, a monument shaped like a teardrop. I walked on by the float planes and thought maybe how much saw beauty in a biker rolling down the pier in the sun. The screen is on. There's smoke coming from the stacks. There are reflections of light. Thank you.
I believe there is a possibility that Paul Casey may do a poem.
We have to hear a poem from your new book.
That's none of your concern. I'm the master of ceremony. You have to be in your poem.
Okay, I'm not going to read a poem from my new collection.
Bitch.
No, I have to read a poem from my new collection.
Yes?
Okay, I will.
Milk it now, milk it.
Hold it up for us to see.
Hold down there, in the light.
Gorgeous cover, just like
the... Oh, my Rosie, Luke Rosie, alright. Quick, take pictures of her, she's all embarrassed.
I don't know, it's a read.
Hurry up, we have got a little bit of time, you're fucking page faffing around.
Page 8.
There is no page 8.
69.
Do you want the Barbie poem?
Yeah.
Or,
no, not that one.
Let's try another one.
Wildflower, you read yesterday.
Wildflower.
Yeah, that one.
Make her reading question.
That's gorgeous.
One after that.
I'd be in trouble either way.
The Android.
No matter what I do, I'm in trouble.
Just close the
you
book.
You stop flapping the fucking book. Just
whatever page
look at the index.
It's the longest one.
Okay, last one, sir. Crazy. Now that this isn't virtual anymore, you know? It's not virtual. That's why. I scaled the cliffs of Moher to write about the tourists. Trekked south till there were no more barriers. Signs of stick men falling. To where I could breathe alone. Right up at the edge where I've always been afraid of imagining that I've always been and forever will be falling. To imagine being afraid of imagining falling. To let go, spilled back, eyes to sky, clutching barren blossoms picked from you. I went in, gannet deep, shot straight into the air to reclaim my still form, then danced in the Tower of Moher above the clear blue day. Trace memories of this scene recur. Mitochondrial microphone coaxed open by the sun. These cliffs, those islands, the fall and lay of it, the width and breadth of it, the countless known unknowns, like Mog of the Hundred Battles, or why Claire isn't in Comet. But writing as I walk now, should this ledge crumble, please know you were the last wildflower in my mind.
To put a top and tail on the night, can we have our current five-word champion, Mr. Stanley Ross?
They say there's a lesson in everything, and when Rab asked me tonight, I said, I'll put me down anyway, so I'll put you down last, you can close the show. Like, for fuck's sake. Anyway, I'm going to do a David Bowie poem.
Alright!
I did the David Bowie poem I had the day he died. I was actually the MC, but I've since rewritten it, and there's a reason for that. On the same week I went to see a play about mental health, and it was fucking amazing. And it reminded me that, you know, those of us who have been in that space need to talk about it. So I've rewritten it with that idea in mind. It's called Peter and the Wolf, open bracket, Aladdin saying, close bracket. And we've got two voices in it. I can't fucking act, so I'm going to go here for one voice and here for the other one. But I'll only move once, so don't panic too much, okay? After today, Peter, pretty things are going to hell, and diamond dogs will be dancing in the streets. Little wonder I feel free, for I am divine when kooks tumble and twirl up the hill backwards in the charge of the ever-circling skeletal family, by the unwashed and somewhat slightly dazed underground. Imagine, I say to myself, an occasional dream of Andy Warhol's Art Decade, the Buddha of suburbia looking for a friend, breaking glass and almost grown reptile. Imagine isolation as your sole love. Heroes under pressure trying to get to heaven, dead men walking and all the young dudes shaking all over kingdom come. A lust for life is nothing to be desired, Peter, and I know it's going to happen someday. When I live my dream, we are the dead. So sacrifice yourself, Peter. Sacrifice yourself to some weird sin. Say, please, Mr. Gravedigger, I'm tired of my life. Let me sleep beside you in a small plot of land where sound and vision black out in sorrow. Sorry, Mr. Wolf, my voyeur of utter destruction, but my death, it's no game, and I'm dead against it. And you can't talk here today, gone tomorrow, when in reality, I wish you would move on. So I say to myself, what's really happening is day in, day out, a sense of doubt runs around and around my sweet head, and I keep forgetting the mirror telling lies. I'm deranged, without you I'm nothing, can hide away the truth that right now there is a happy land, a better future, a fantastic voyage outside the hurt and sorrow that fills my heart. Can you hear me, Mr. Wolf? Can you hear me, Mr. Gravedigger? There is a happy land, a better future, a brilliant adventure. So get real. I can't give everything away. I've things to do. So go now. Move on. Anyway, anyhow, anywhere, move on. It ain't easy, but it's going to be me that survives.